Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. We are in the interval between now and the election doing special reports wherever possible and a deeper drill down than usual on what is at stake in this election of 2012. And specifically, we're trying to establish what facets of the international arena, that the national security challenges should be uppermost in the minds of voters as they go to the polls on November 6th. And I'm very pleased that we have a most special report, a return visit from a guest we spoke to just a few weeks ago about his marvelous new book. It's entitled The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism. He is John Perdue. His day job is as director of the Latin American programs at the Fund for American Studies, and a man who has cut his teeth on what's happening in what I think of as our front yard. Some call it the backyard, but I think it's more important than that. And let me start, if I may, with you, John, by picking up on a discussion I had yesterday with former Ambassador Roger Noriega. We discussed something that Mitt Romney introduced, and interestingly enough, Roger, who is no slouch when it comes to understanding this hemisphere, said he was unaware of this point that Mitt Romney made in the last debate with President Obama, namely that Latin America is rivaling in terms of the size of the market and therefore its potential importance to our economy, that of communist China. And I wonder if that speaks to you as much as it did to me and to Roger about the underappreciated importance of Latin America to America, not just economically, but also in a geostrategic sense.
Frank, I thought this struck me just as much, I think, as it did you. It's a great point. And what I think we rarely speak of, and it's hardly acknowledged here in D.C. very often, is the fact that the economic approach to Latin America is equivalent to the same things we do strategically to fight things like Hezbollah and the Quds Force there, because wherever we have trade and wherever we have relationships with Latin America, we also kind of undercut China, we undercut the anti-American regimes like Iran and others that have gained a foothold there over the last 10 years while Hugo Chavez has been inviting them in to not only Venezuela, but as well as introducing them to his allies. But, I had no idea that the China market was the equivalent to the size of Latin America, and I thought it was a good point. And the debate before, Romney had mentioned Latin America, I think was the only other time that the thing was mentioned, but he had gotten fact-checked, so to speak, as they call it these days, from earlier in the campaign when he made a mention of Hezbollah being in the hemisphere. And the PolitiFact that tends to be kind of out of bounds on this put a truth-o-meter saying that it was mostly false. And so, they've acted as if there's not enough evidence, things like that. But since then, we've discovered a Hezbollah cell in Merida, Mexico. We've discovered the Times of Israel published a story about a month ago that there was a Hezbollah training facility in northern Nicaragua. So there's plenty of evidence there. And, we either do one of two things. We either trade as much as we can, as much as possible with good partners in Latin America, or we face the consequences and we let, anti-American actors come in and take our place.
Yeah. Well, that's where I want to go next with you is, Roger, we've got anti-American actors, as you put it, very much present in the hemisphere at the moment, and in the person most especially of the newly reelected, sadly, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. He is, of course, the architect of what you have aptly titled your book, The War of All the People, a war that is being waged by him against us. And give us a flavor of how Hugo Chavez has gone about mobilizing the resources of his country and trying wherever he can with other anti-American actors to destabilize the region and make it increasingly inhospitable to us.
Well, the title of the book, The War of All the People, comes from a term that first Fidel Castro used and then passed it on to Hugo Chavez, which means to incorporate all elements of society and all methods of warfare. It's total war against the United States, but it's non-conventional. And these days it's become far more sophisticated by using propaganda. They now, every one of these countries has now launched a satellite television network to where they, it's a means for them to push out propaganda constantly that's under the guise of conventional news. And what they do is they try to undercut and subvert the United States and hurt our interests geopolitically. They block us at the UN by buying off partners there and by cajoling or convincing even smaller countries that may be able to block us. They've done this by there's a Palestinian initiative last year that tried to get this Democrat this thing passed at the United Nations to where they were recognized, which would have undercut the peace talks that we were trying to do. So a lot of this is conducted that way. And the best example to tie this back to what Romney mentioned in the debate is the Free Trade Area of the Americas, which was a Bush initiative, Bush 43 initiative, that was undercut purely by Fidel Castro, Hugo Chavez, and these actors in the hemisphere that don't want to see any increased trade with the United States because they know it undermines their propaganda and undermines their intentions in the region. So every time we drop something like that or drop the ball, and if you remember this, you know, we almost got, it took forever and it took really a very special situation to get the Colombian Free Trade Pact passed, and that was only after Speaker Boehner really pressed hard on it and got it passed and told the president that he wasn't going to sign the Korean Free Trade Agreement if the Colombian wasn't accepted as well. And so we've got our main ally, Colombia, in the region that's stymied and that we offer no assistance to while we allow all these other actors to come in and supplant us.
Yeah. I want to come back to Colombia with you and trade, for that matter, John Perdue, in a moment. But just staying with Chavez and what I think of as kind of a bill of particulars of his activities. You mentioned, of course, his inheritance of the mantle from Fidel Castro, and we'll visit about him in a moment. But to the extent that what we are witnessing in the person of Hugo Chavez is really this revolutionary leftist, anti-American, Marxist, and he has had the immense resources of his oil-rich nation at his disposal, where would you point to as the most problematic use of those resources when it comes to really threatening the interests and equities and perhaps ultimately people of the United States?
Well, he's used it from not only, for instance, helping to purchase votes sufficiently to win elections in Argentina, Nicaragua, Ecuador, Bolivia, but there was a case that got tried in Miami 2 years ago where they were carrying $800,000 in a bag through the customs in Argentina, and it was intended for Cristina Kirchner, who's the president of Argentina now and is an ally of Hugo Chavez. And this, not only that, but as far to give you another example of the propaganda, the use of this type of propaganda, if you remember the Joe Kennedy, Joe for Oil, the he was running commercials in northeastern states to get this subsidized Venezuelan oil to supposedly poor citizens in the northeast United States, where you know you've got Venezuela people that actually have, there's been mudslides and earthquakes that put people where they actually have nowhere to go and are destitute, and we're promoting subsidized oil from Chavez. But this money gets spread around. It buys votes. Chavez has cut deals. Even in this most recent election, there were simple things. You know, we talk a lot about
in Venezuela itself. You're talking
about. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There were things that were where we talk about his ability to commit fraud through the electronic voting system and things like that. But he, you know, my point is that he really didn't need to. There are plenty of ways with cash on hand, so to speak, to buy votes. And one of the things he did was cut an oil deal with China that gave him a 20-year, that gave him cash up front to sell oil to China. He did a similar deal with Vladimir Putin in Russia. If you saw the news, Putin gave him a puppy about a month ago, and that may be big news throughout the region.
We have to pause here for just a moment. We'll come back to Putin and the Chinese and their dealings with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, because I think this is very much part of the war of all the people about which John Perdue has written brilliantly. Stay with us, and we'll find out more about how the Monroe Doctrine is being shredded in our hemisphere and what it means for you. Straight ahead.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, that adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are drilling down with John Perdue on what's going on in Latin America, a strategically vital part of the world for Americans. And we've learned from Mitt Romney recently, a very, very important and increasingly promising economic partner as well. And John Perdue, again, is the author of a brand new and marvelous book, The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism. And John, before the break, we were talking a little bit about a puppy that Vladimir Putin gave Hugo Chavez as an expression of his appreciation for what Chavez is doing for the Russians. Tell us a bit more about what it means to these hostile foreign powers. And I think that's a no exaggeration, hostile to the United States, these foreign powers like China, Russia, for that matter, Iran, North Korea, and others that are now able to obtain a foothold in our hemisphere, a very large one, thanks to Hugo Chavez.
Yes, I was mentioning the puppy that was a symbolic gift from Putin to Chavez, and it got a lot of news. But the main thing that happened with that transaction was that it gave Chavez $1.5 billion in cash up front to be able to use to win re-election. And one of the things I talked about in the book was that it's almost as if China, Russia, Iran, and all the anti-American actors that are collaborating, it's like they join each other and have conferences just to share best practices as to how to subvert the United States and do the same thing that each other is doing that works. And one of the things that the Radio Liberty just got kicked out of Russia, and this is the same thing that's happened in Bolivia, Nicaragua, and Iran even 2 years ago passed a bill to where you had to register your NGO and things like that, to where it just makes it too burdensome to have an NGO or to have a, you know, a government watchdog there. And, you know, the purpose of all of this, and I guess what I should state is what asymmetric warfare, the main purpose that Chavez, Putin, Ahmadinejad, and all these do is to propagate the regime. They want to keep themselves or an acolyte of themselves in power as long as possible to carry out their intentions. And one of the things they do about this is help each other not only geopolitically with propaganda, but they support, you know, Chavez offers a Western voice of condemnation against the United States for Russia, for Iran, and for China, and they, Chavez helps them not only with cutting oil deals, but through OPEC. He helps the Middle East. He allows China to come in and do things that they would normally not be able to do, and allows Iran. Remember, we talk a lot about this Damascus to Tehran to Caracas flight that was bringing diplomats, people like that in, and he's let the Cubans run the ONADEX in Venezuela, which is the passport and ID system. So we're certain that many nefarious actors have now been given identity documents to allow them to travel frequently and wherever they want to. So there's a lot of different reasons for a bit mutually beneficial reasons for Chavez to do this and to be against the United States, but it also helps him in these other countries as well, and not only for to be able to produce quickly money when the elections come up, but also to just undermine and supplant the United States in the region.
John Perdue, one of the things that has been a hallmark of this relationship between Putin and Chavez, as I think you've alluded to, is arms trades. That is to say, the Russians have been selling fighters and submarines and immense quantities of small arms to the government of Venezuela. Are we seeing those weapons, especially the small arms, migrating into the hands of others in the region, helping to, as I say, destabilize it and make it more hostile to Americans and their equities?
You remember that one of the deals that Russia put together with Venezuela was to set up an AK-47 manufacturing plant in Venezuela, and of course this is the preferred weapon of revolutionaries all throughout the world. So we assume from the first that this was simply a means to produce more weapons to get in the hands of the FARC, for instance, in Colombia. Chavez is supposedly behind these recent peace talks that have been underway with between the FARC and the Colombian government. And we're certain that arms are being passed across the border from Venezuela to Colombia. So this is undermining there. We've seen we used to be able to to deny somebody like Chavez the replacement parts for fighter aircraft, things like that. But with this putting together this deal with Russia, allows them to be able to buy directly from them and to be able to maintain whatever aircraft or fighters that they have, and without having to go through the United States. So it's a strategic move that way as well.
Let me ask you about one other facet of this foreign presence in Venezuela and seeming buildup of truly menacing capabilities. John Perdue, we touch base with you about this from time to time, and I don't know if there's anything new to report. But again, as Americans think about their security in the run-up to this election, as they think about specifically a question that I want uppermost on everyone's minds, which is, are you safer today than you were 4 years ago? And more to the point, do you expect, if the present trajectory is allowed to persist, that you will be safer, that your children, that maybe your grandchildren will be safer than they are today, 4 years hence? And one of the factors that that I'm very, very concerned about here is the possible presence, if not today, then in the near future, in Venezuela, of Iranian ballistic missiles, possibly nuclear-armed Iranian ballistic missiles in due course. What do we know about what's happening there, John, and how serious, in your estimation, is that as a threat? Not so much asymmetric, an old-fashioned Cuban Missile Crisis-style threat to this country.
I feel like this is one of the best examples that any kind of between now and the time that Israel may decide that it needs to attack Iran for when it, as it approaches becoming nuclearized, it's going to be far, far greater pressure for Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, any of these proxy groups that are based in that, you know, at least have agents or operatives in Latin America. Is the incentive to strike a soft target, for instance, a consulate or an embassy of the United States in Latin America, or to send a proxy agent across the border to hit somewhere south of, in southeast United States, the incentive to do so is going to get larger and larger. So that's one thing that worries me. But we've heard reports of missiles in the Paraguayan Peninsula in Venezuela. You know, I hear stories about Shahab 3s that would put it within range of South Florida, and got a multi-stage Shahab, you could actually get a little bit north of that, so the capability is there. And not only that, what I consider the greatest threat is an EMP strike, and that could go, you could put an, buy commercially, or not even really on the black market, on the commercial market internationally, you could buy a Scud and tip it with a nuclear warhead, but forgetting the logistics of it, you could put it on a trawler and get it into the Gulf of Mexico and launch it before there, you know, there needs to be a little bit of lead time for even a Patriot-type system to detect this, but you put it over the Midwest and above one of our main electrical hubs, and it's the greatest threat that we face right now. So as long as you've got a willing actor there, we need to be extremely worried about it.
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that, John. As you probably know, this threat of electromagnetic pulse is one of the things that we at the Center for Security Policy have been worrying about for a long time. It involves, of course, as you say, potentially a relatively basic missile, a relatively crude nuclear warhead that is detonated in the high altitude exo-atmospheric areas above the United States and would rain down, as you say, a burst of electromagnetic energy in an intense way that could devastate our electrical grid and our society. And what makes this so worrying, and coming back to the connection here between Hugo Chavez's Venezuela and Iran, is the Iranians keep talking, in the person of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, as you know, John Perdue, about a world without America being not only desirable but achievable. And the way that it would seem to me that could be most readily accomplished, perhaps from Venezuelan soil, perhaps from a steamer that is operating in the Gulf of Mexico, coming out of Venezuela someplace else, is through this electromagnetic pulse style attack. John Perdue, we are very, very appreciative of your keeping an eye on this part of the world, this hemisphere, and sharing with us your insights, both in your new book, The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism. And when we come back in our third segment with John Perdue, we're going to visit a bit about this Hezbollah angle and the role that they're playing in the war against America in our own front yard. Straight ahead.
Hey, parents! Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted, and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We're joined once again by John Perdue, the author of a marvelous new book, The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism. John is with the Fund for American Studies. He directs their Latin American programs there and has an expertise on the issues that we've been discussing and the relevance of them, whether it is recognized or not, for our security interests and therefore, I believe, for our election upcoming. And John, just before the break, I mentioned that I'd like to come back to this point that you made early on about Hezbollah, a designated terrorist organization closely allied with, many believe it's simply a proxy for the Iranians. You mentioned some operations, a cell that they have in Mexico, a facility that they have for training in Nicaragua. What else do we know about Hezbollah's activities in our hemisphere, and specifically the extent to which it poses a threat to us, not just our interests in the region south of our border, but actually here in the United States as well?
First of all, the mission of Hezbollah and the IRGC and all these is primarily to export the Iranian revolution throughout the world. And what they do in Latin America, they've been able to not only have a safe haven in lots of places that are fairly remote in the tribe border area, for instance, that where they planned and conducted the attack on in 1992 and 1994 on the Israeli embassy in the MIA community building in Buenos Aires, Argentina. But now they also, besides training, recruiting, we've even had reports of them recruiting Venezuelans to go back to Qom in Iran to train for, get guerrilla tactic training and all of that. But they've also sent the Quds Force and these other groups there that not only do they do terrorist training, but they also simply train the militias that Chavez has put together. And their purpose is to be in the street, just like the during the Green Revolution in Iran, is to basically crack heads and to the purpose is, it looks bad on international TV these days to have tanks in the streets. You get the Chavez will get condemned, but if it looks like it's civilians supporting their wonderful President Hugo Chavez against usurpers, so to speak, that it looks a lot better on TV. So what these forces do is train the militia to defend the revolution, supposedly, and to keep Hugo Chavez in power. And the same goes for Daniel Ortega or Rafael Correa. We've had incidents in most of these countries where there's been bloodshed, and it comes from these groups. But Hezbollah not only is exporting the Iranian revolution, but it's training as well as trying to maintain the regimes there.
Yeah, and in the process, among other things, it is, as I understand it, converting people to, you know, Sharia adherent Islam, the doctrine that gives rise to jihad. Talk to us, if you would, John, about a problem that has emerged from time to time, not as much as one might think it would, in this election cycle, about immigration and the continued porousness of our border and the possibility that Hezbollah and its friends in the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, in the Quds Force, in Hamas, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad, who knows who all else, can be taking advantage of that porous border to bring their support for the Iranian regime or simply their jihad against us into this country.
One of the things that they do is go into the area, go into the region and find the diaspora that exists there. From these, a lot of these could be Lebanese, Syrian descendants that have moved there 100 years ago, and their families have continued. And it tend to be in the one was the tribe border or where there are zona francas or tax-free zones, where they do a lot of commerce. So they fundraise there primarily, and it doesn't take them much work to go to the local mosque and survey for a little while and find who is the most, who appears to be in the right demographic, the right age, and the right motivation to possibly be a recruit. But not only that, we've had numerous occasions on the Mexican border where we've had Hezbollah operatives busted. Over the last 3 years, there's been one in Tijuana. There was one near Brownsville, Texas, that was busted that were working with the Coyotes. And this is, you know, excluding this more recent
The Coyotes, meaning the people who smuggled people and drugs and anything else
exactly.
In across.
Yep. Exactly. And the recent example of this Texan, this Iranian that had a cousin that was in the IRGC or Hezbollah, we're not confirmed yet, that was, tried to recruit one of the Zetas, one of the Mexican cartel members, to carry out an assassination of the Saudi ambassador here in Washington, D.C. at a restaurant, which would have probably killed some senators and congressmen as well as some civilians. So the collaboration on the border is one of the scariest, but it doesn't even have to take place on the border. They can hit a U.S. embassy in Chile, for instance, just by utilizing their operatives that they can easily find there.
Yeah. John, in the remaining time in this segment, let's talk a bit more about the drug piece of this operation. You alluded to the Zetas, one of the cartels that is now making lots of money moving drugs, illicit drugs across our borders. The Mexican government seems to have had some considerable successes, I think in some cases at least with the help of the United States, in rolling up at least senior leaders of a number of the drug cartels operating in that country. Are we seeing some headway being made in that drug war, or is this like trying to take out bin Laden but failing to appreciate that the underlying organization replaces him and marches on?
well, the term we use for this a lot of times is the corset effect or the balloon effect, where if you tamp down trafficking in this area, then it moves to another. And you always see some of that regardless, but there's definitely, you cannot call it anything but successes recently getting some of these top kingpins in Mexico. The only thing that's worrisome right now is you just had a transition from Felipe Calderon, who had based his entire presidency on going after the cartels, to a transition to Enrique Peña Nieto, who we're still not sure how aggressive he's planning on being against the cartel. So we worry about it just having been time wasted under Calderon. And but you know what we've seen is all this traffic used to come through the Caribbean and overland, either by small planes or speedboats, and now it comes through the age through a 300-year-old not really smuggling, but even transit routes from South America all the way up to the Mexican border. And that pipeline, as we call it, can move anything from guns to drugs to terrorists, and it's still being utilized. And that's what all the violence has been taking place in Mexico has taken advantage of that once we kind of tamp down things out of Colombia.
Mm-hmm. John, speaking of Colombia, the FARC is one of the preeminent narco-trafficking organizations in the region. It has been a blight on the people of Colombia, on their economy, on their lives, on ours as well, needless to say. The government has decided in its wisdom once again to engage in diplomatic negotiations with these guys. Can any good come of that in your estimation, especially given that I gather the FARC has just killed several of their police officers?
The greatest concern that I have about this is that it may legitimize the FARC, whereas President Uribe spent his entire term delegitimizing the FARC. And what this does, the last time this was attempted, what the FARC did was simply utilize the time, utilize this huge swath of land that they gave them to use as a safe haven, basically, during the time they were supposedly negotiating, and they just rebuilt themselves and reconstituted the FARC while they did it. So I worry about that happening again. Santos seems to be understanding this may happen and trying to prevent it, but we'll see.
But is it, sort of a bad omen, shall we say, that the FARC is still very much engaged in killing officials where they can? Or is this just the nature of the beast that Santos is going to wage war against them while he parleys and they will do the same?
One of the tenets that he put forth before he would begin any negotiations was the fact that he was not calling off the war. And, of course, I anticipated that the FARC would continue to do what they do. But I think they'll have to either do some symbolic gesture, such as handing over their remaining captives and kidnapped victims that they still got under their control, as well as to stop murdering civilians. But we get to see that happen. And my only other worry is that they're going to be conducting these negotiations in Havana. And I suppose that anybody from the government side is going to be bugged, and so it'll be a little bit of an uneven playing field.
You bet. We're going to come to Cuba in just a moment. We're going to be back with John Perdue, author of The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism, right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to the Gospel.
I just got
to
stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're back for our fourth segment of this special edition of Secure Freedom Radio with John Perdue, who is helping us really understand what is going on south of our border in what I think of as our front yard, Latin America, and what the stakes are, not only for the people of the region, but for us, both economically and strategically. And John, just before the break, we touched on Fidel Castro. You mentioned earlier in the program that he's, of course, been a mentor to Hugo Chavez. The agenda of war for all the people was his. Now the torch is passed to Chavez. Castro has been rumored of late to be at death's door. As, for that matter, has Hugo Chavez. Talk to us a little bit about what it means in both of these countries if and when, finally, these folks move to their reward.
Well, for a little historical perspective, Fidel Castro, once he came to power, one of the first things he did was try to invade Venezuela because of its oil wealth, and he got thwarted there twice trying to do so, and it was the greatest lifeline that he's ever been given after the Soviet Union had fallen and stopped sending him subsidies, that Hugo Chavez came along and started subsidizing him with barrels of oil that he was able to sell on the spot market for hard currency, and that's the only way that the regime has been able to stay in power there. And so one of my theories is that he handed over to his younger brother, Raul, power to run the country, supposedly, so he could concentrate on handling his friendship with Chavez, because that is their sustenance these days. And, you know, we've heard these rumors so many times, I'm reluctant to determine that either one of them may be dying anytime soon. It's going to create a vacuum of power within the region if either one of these two goes, because everybody there respects the opinion of Fidel Castro so much that they allow him to, Chavez has basically handed over the country to him and to his operatives. And once either of those two go, we've seen, you know, naming of Nicolas Maduro as the vice president in the past week and a lot of shuffling in Chavez's cabinet.
Yeah.
Yes, a lot of shuffling in the cabinet have been people that, from my contacts in Venezuela, said that are Cuban approved, and so what it looks like to us is that it's a move to propagate the regime in the case that Hugo Chavez or Fidel Castro dies. They've got allies there to continue the revolution.
Mm-hmm. And to the extent, John, that vacuum of power may prove an opportunity for the folks who aspire to freedom in Venezuela, the folks who aspire to freedom in Cuba. Do you think that the two regimes will either independently or jointly be able to crush the opposition and perpetuate in some form or fashion what we have witnessed in both countries as I said earlier, a blight on their people and a danger to us?
Well, let me bring back with this. I think the next administration, whether it's an Obama or a Romney administration, has to engage at a minimum in fighting this symbolic or asymmetric warfare that we have going against them. For instance, simple things like pleading the case strongly for releasing Alan Gross, who is this contractor that was in Cuba and has been in prison as a political prisoner now for way too long, and the Obama administration seems not to have put nearly enough emphasis on. Simple things like this show at least a willingness that we're not going to put up with some of the things that they've done for 50 years there. And if there are dissidents there rotting in jails that look to us for support at a minimum. And the first thing that we need to do, either administration, is to show that support and to acknowledge the fact that there's an asymmetric war being conducted against us, and to do even the minimum to counter it.
Well, let's explore that a little bit further. Let's say, for the purposes of discussion, John Perdue, that knowing what you know about the war of all the people and the nexus, as you put it, of Latin American terrorism with this virulent anti-Americanism of Chavez and Castro, should the next administration come to you and say, what do we do about it? Beyond sort of these symbolic gestures, are there specific course corrections that you believe are not only necessary but vital, really, to the future well-being of this country and its relations with an important region we've been discussing through this hour?
The first thing I would say is overtly and loudly support our allies in the region. Colombia, Chile, places like that have heard nothing from us in the last 4 years, or even longer than that. Support them overtly and constantly, and help them in any way that we can with trade, commerce, anything that helps their citizens become wealthier, so they don't have to. So there aren't as many recruits for things like this, and they don't have the influence of China, Hezbollah, or Iran, or any of these groups, whether it be just for commercial purposes or for terroristic purposes. But also to at least acknowledge the fact that we're in a war, that they've declared one against us. There's currently the H.R. 3783, I believe it is, the Confronting Iran in the Western Hemisphere Act. It was proposed by Congressman Jeff Duncan of South Carolina. It's scheduled to go, it's passed the House recently, scheduled to go to the Senate in the lame duck session, and things like that would just do simple things like require the State Department to do an assessment and report to Congress on their assessment of Iran's influence in the hemisphere and what we plan to do about it. There's simple things like that that could be picked up immediately that need to be done, and I would expect, I think the Romney people that are working, the policy people that are working with his campaign have acknowledged a lot of this and have said they would be doing that.
John, one of the piece of the sort of self-power equation that you alluded to earlier with the both the rolling up of some of our operations, notably Radio Liberty beamed into Russia, and the rising presence on the airwaves of state-controlled satellite broadcasting from our enemies. How important would you say it is that we be making a concerted effort, either through government means or through the private communications means, of telling our story and otherwise trying to influence these populations south of our border?
Asymmetric warfare is the best model for it. Is how David, the doctrine of how David defeats Goliath, how a country like Venezuela, Iran, would go about subverting or defeating the United States, and they use their asymmetric disadvantages to their advantage. And the one area where we have the asymmetric advantage is in strategic communication, because we have laws here that prevent us from doing anything that would be considered propaganda. And so they can put together these satellite channels and beam them throughout the world and propagandize constantly against the United States interests, but we can't do the same. But it's the one area where we're the David and they're the Goliath. And so we've seen these things sprout up lately. But just simple things like, let me give you a current example of how asymmetric warfare should be countered. And that is this, for instance, this video that was supposedly the impetus for the attack on our consulate in Benghazi. Not only has it been disproved now that that was the impetus for this, but by trying to make it the impetus or trying to make it the reason that, that it was almost our fault, it legitimizes these contrived grievances that these groups come up with, that we give them power by trying to say that it's that the cause, when they should, nobody had even heard of the video prior to that. But what we've done now is not only given a false reason for the attack, but we've given it legitimacy as well.
We have indeed. John, we've only got about a minute left. This is a much bigger question than the time will permit, but very, very briefly, what role should the American military be playing, if anything, in this region? How important is it for us even to be present militarily in this region, and can we do it with the limited and shrinking military resources we have at the moment?
If sequestration happens in the next few months, that will be the first place that they pull the military, I can promise you. But we've seen very, very quietly, Investors Business Daily did an article on this about a month and a half ago and cited me in it. But our military has been doing, we have DEA military and FBI there doing joint operations with Mexican military and others throughout the region. So it looks like they're at least putting together almost a zone defense during these days that it might be heightened tensions with Iran. So they'd be the first to go with sequestration, and I think it's we're actually doing a little bit more these days than we had in the past.
And need to continue to do so. John Perdue, thank you so much for spending this hour with us and for the insights you've contained in your book, The War of All the People, The Nexus of Latin American Radicalism and Middle Eastern Terrorism. Thanks, too, for the great work you do at the Fund for American Studies. Keep it up. Keep coming back to us, if you will. I can't think of a more important issue for us to be addressing in this election cycle than what is happening in our own front yard. John, keep it up, and we'll talk with you soon. We'll talk with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.